Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 146 of the Nerd Cantina Show. And we've got a cantina conversation with Megan McCarthy-Bianc and Mia Manansawa. Mia's here promoting her debut novel, Arsenic and Adobo. And Megan does her normal great job of having an in-depth discussion about Mia's background and specifically this project here. They also spend... This is another great interview. Hope you enjoy.
We are welcoming Mia P. Manansala, author of Arsenic and Adobo. It is your debut novel, and it is out on May 4th.
Star Wars Day. Yes.
Yep, May the 4th. Exactly. thank you so much for taking the time. You know, it's really exciting for you. Your first book's coming out, and we're coming up on that last month of your, promotion and getting ready for the release. So I'm really excited to have you here. I really enjoyed the book. There's a lot to go through here. So I'm glad that you made the time.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm super excited to talk about it. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, for sure. So let's go ahead and get started with your background. And obviously this, you're lending people in your culture and then the community, the Filipino community, a voice, and mm-hmm. that's very awesome. And so I felt like I learned something with this book too. So let's get started with, your background and how your experiences and your culture and all that kind of helped inspire this story.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Filipino American, born and raised in Chicago.
Nice.
And, I have never really seen, characters that look like me that reflect my life in the media that I love.
Right.
And so I always knew that someday I would write characters like me that have like my background, but I also... One of the problems with there being so few voices, so little representation, is that so much weight is placed on the voices that are out there. And yeah. So I want to go on record and say, this is my experience. This is my voice as a Filipino American woman from Chicago. Like in
right.
no way does this speak, to the Filipino culture as, as a whole, right?
Sure,
because we are not
sure.
a monolith. There are so many different aspects to it, So I want to be really careful that
yeah.
Yes, I'm adding to this, but I don't want anyone to look at, to read. It's a murder mystery,
right.
It's a light murder mystery.
Yeah. You don't want people to overgeneralize necessarily.
Yeah. It's just oh, that's yeah. awesome. So all Filipinos do this. It's no. this is a fake Midwestern town. That's
right,
not what you're
right.
supposed to be getting from this. But it is honestly though, one of the greatest things about this is seeing how excited other Filipino and Filipino diaspora readers are out there. People who are I'm not really into mystery, but oh my God, that cover. Or
yeah.
oh my God, a Filipino character who it's not about her identity. She just gets to go around and have fun and solve crimes. How cool is that? And I'm yes,
yeah.
how cool is that? Thank you. So connecting with those readers has been such an amazing experience. And the book's not even out yet. Just the early readers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It means so much to me.
Yeah, no. And I love, the title Arsenic and Adobo has such a nice ring to it. It's important that you bring that up just because, while it's important to have those voices out there, it's also important to recognize that everybody's multidimensional, mm-hmm. And it's this is a part of this woman. Obviously this is where she comes from. This is where her family comes from. But she did the American thing. She went to college. She mm-hmm. got, started up a serious relationship and then, mm-hmm. That didn't go well at all.
Yeah.
And so she had to move back home and figure things out. And she also had to catch up with what's been going on since she left. And I thought it was interesting, how you kind of took the route to that's where her story begins, kind of, where, or that's where the readers are meeting her, is where she's kind of mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to say she's hit rock bottom, but it's like, oh, she's got to kind of like walk back with her tail in between her legs a little bit. And, you know, she already is like preparing for the criticism and all that, but then she's also like, well, you know, I kind of get to catch up with other people who, you know, I grew up with in high school, you know, for better or for worse. And then she also gets to, you know, reconnect with her best friend, and which I thought was really cool. Cause yeah, all that adds on to her, what makes her whole. Even though obviously the Filipino culture is a huge part of her, it's like, still like, you know, that's just not who she is, all of who she is, like, you know? So no, I thought that was really cool. And, you know, of course, I'm a sucker for dogs too, so I love that her little dachshund was like such an important part of her little story. So then there's a good amount of humor in this story too, like, even though it is like a murder mystery crime novel, you know, you didn't shy away, and you didn't shy away from like really serious topics, like with the drug abuse and stuff like that. And so kind of how, like, How you know, was it a challenge to like incorporate the humor in there? There's like some cultural humor in there. And, you know, I appreciate that you also did provide, you know, like the little translation and, you know, translation like guide at the beginning, which was really helpful. And so, yeah, like, how did you, you know, incorporate that humor? Like, how challenging was it to do that while still making things still like kind of serious, you know?
Well, so this, my book is like a subgenre of mystery. We call it like cozy mysteries, which is kind of what it sounds like. You know, it's like it's like the hallmark of mysteries. But like one day, like me and my mentor, Kelly Garrett, amazing writer, we were just kind of joking that like a lot of cozies are basically just rom-coms with dead bodies. And so like, that's why like that entire first page is me kind of like, you know, making fun of this genre that I really love, you know, kind of like playing with the tropes that we see so much. And yeah, thank you for saying, you know, saying it has the humor in there, because like being funny is like really important to me, because, you know, like it's like a defense mechanism, right? Anything that has like these really difficult, tough moments, like my instinct is always to go with a joke to like lighten the mood, you know. So actually the hardest thing wasn't incorporating the humor, it was knowing when to pull back. Because there are times where you want to lighten the moment, and there are times where you really need to let it sit, where you need to have the impact of what really just happened be there. And, you know, I don't know, I'm such an awkward person. Like, even when I'm writing, I'm like, conflict. Can I write this? You know, I always want to just make that joke just because it's easier for me, you know? luckily, like, I have really good beta readers. I have great editors, and they're like, no, you know, this is great. don't stop getting in your own way, basically. You know, like, this could be a really, really, like, amazing scene if you just let it play out the way it's supposed to, you know. And they're right.
Yeah, because it definitely is a challenge of like kind of finding that sweet spot, so to speak. Because yeah, if like if you're gonna go there, you have to really like do it right. And that's good that you had you know. And like, I like how you say that humor is like a little bit bit of a defense mechanism, because I guess like I think some of us do it without thinking about it. And so it's cool that you're like really self-aware where you're just like, you know, and then, and you know, it's just kind of, maybe playing with that idea of, you know, incorporating that humor, but then also knowing, all learning from that experience too, not only being self-aware, but also, you know, being able to handle, you know, and take, you know, take people's suggestions and things like that. It's, you know, it's really good to have. For one thing, I have learned from interviewing authors like this, it's like, especially with debut novels, it's really good to like have people on your team and to be able to like, even though it is your baby, like this novel, it's like, it's very important to just, you know, trust also people who are experienced, you know, in this process too. So like what were like the biggest lessons learned then? Cause well, you are a writing coach, right? I think I was doing some little background research on you.
Yeah. As of last year, like I'm a certified writing coach and I've been a mentor with this program called Pitch Tours for a few years now.
Okay, that's really cool. So is it hard like for you to follow your own advice, or like how does that go? Oh, no.
Like, so like I like to tell my like I tell my clients all the time when they're beating themselves up, like, look, just because you know something logically doesn't mean that you can necessarily execute it in that way, because you're so close to it, right? Like we all know like the rules. I'm doing air quotes for this because I forgot we're like no one's gonna see what I'm doing, you know, like everyone knows like what's supposed to be good writing, what you're supposed to do, you know, technically. But when you're in the middle of it, like you're too close, you know, and what's in your head versus what's actually on the page and like what's getting conveyed, it's really hard to see the difference, you know? So, you know, I don't care who you are, what stage you're at. I feel like outside eyes are always necessary, because you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so like having people spot those little things. And again, like when I write the first draft, like it's for me, right?
Yeah.
But then as I revise, it's for publication, right? I want other people to like it too. So it still has to say my vision, but I have to write it. Like once it's gone, it's its own entity. Like I can't just, if I get criticism and people are like, well, I don't understand this. I'm like, well, it's supposed to be this. And it's like, well, Mia, did you write that? Is it on the page?
Right.
like, right. This is not telepathy. Like, you know, despite, you know, Stephen King saying writing is telepathy. Like it's not like literally telepathy. You are not going to know what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
Unless someone is out there like letting me know whether or not I succeeded, you know?
Exactly. Like, yeah. Cause you obviously know how it's going to go in your head and how it's supposed to be, but it definitely takes those second or third or fourth pair of eyes to really make it clear that maybe some parts were unclear, or it's like, well, how did we get here? Hold on. Like, how did we get to this place? Maybe you got to circle back and do it. So, but yeah. So when did you start writing this story? I really enjoyed this, cause it's basically, yeah, I just, you know, I was trying to put the pieces together, and the story is like, you know, it's very well paced. All the characters are very likable. You know, I'm not very familiar with the Filipino heritage, so I felt, you know, like this was a really good opportunity for me to become familiar with some of the little, you know, just like the family dynamics. But I think a lot of it's just universal. Like, you know, my mom's family is Mexican. Like, there are some of these things that like resonated with me, but I could see this, like my husband's family is Italian. It's like, there's definitely, that tightness, that those good feelings surrounded by food and people who just find comfort in feeding others. Like, that's, you know, cause Tita Rosie, she just like, you know, she came off as somebody who's just always doing something. She's just always kind of like running around, making something, cooking something, taking care of someone. And it's so funny how, you know, there were so many times in this story where, like, you know, because they're trying to solve this murder, and Lila, or was it Lila? I know you addressed this in the book. How's it pronounced?
Yeah, like in my head, I call her Lila just because, like, Lila. You know, like she is Americanized enough to a point where she would
sure.
do that. It's mostly like in her family that calls her Lila.
Okay. No, that makes sense. But yeah, and like, you know, you see her and Amir and her best friend is like, they're all trying to get ahead of it and use the resources to try to, like, you know, try to stay one or two steps ahead of the game. And then you hear Tita Rosie was just like, oh no, I already gave them the keys to the office or something. Like, oh, I already did this, or no, I just want to get this over with. I'm like, oh my God. Like, no, like you just gave them the leg up, you know, like you just like folded your cards early. And yeah, it's, no, that was like, so funny and so cute. But yeah, kind of like, yeah, I went off on a tangent there, but yeah, I loved how, you know, I got a glimpse into the family dynamic, and it would just, a lot of it just seems so familiar. I feel like anybody from any kind of cultural background can read this and almost identify with that type of dynamic of, like, you know, just growing up in such a tight-knit family and feeling like obligated to be there for your family and kind of the expectations of, you know, what was expected of her, and, you know, necessarily follow that route. And it's kind of like, she kind of is coming back because it didn't work out for her. And it's, you know, and it's, I really enjoyed it. And I felt like it would have resonated pretty well with anybody, from like any cultural background, any kind of like, you know, ethnicity. And, that's why I thought it was really cool about it.
Yeah. One thing, you know, I found, you know, people saying like, it really doesn't really matter where you're from. An auntie is always an auntie.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems to be a constant, you know, people, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, if I'm all over, they're just like, oh my God, you know, like I'm not Filipino, but those aunties, that comment, yeah. the this, the that, I'm like,
a little gossip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Little... It's like they know all the news before, you know, half of it. And it's, yeah, mm-hmm. no, I get it. So there's like a lot of food, yes. you know, this book is also circled around food and how heavily, you know, it's, I could tell that it's like, it's so, you know, important to how the story is moving along. And so how did like, mm-hmm. Like you have a love of cooking, I'm assuming, and like food, and like, how did that help you kind of like, add like what do you feel like that kind of added to this to Lila's story?
Oh, like I love, like food is probably like my favorite thing. Sorry to my husband, but he knows. Yeah. It's weird, like I don't love cooking necessarily, like the day-to-day drudgery of cooking is so boring. Yeah. But I do like cooking and baking for other people. So like I host the holidays at my house, so like for like that, like it's like anxiety ridden, but at the same time I really enjoy being able to put out like this big meal for like my family, or when I bake for my friends and things like that. I think part of a big thing in the book is like how food is a way of showing love, especially in a family that is not very physically affectionate, that mm-hmm. it never verbalizes the words, you know, that they would never say I love you.
Yeah.
But they have a million little ways to show it, and food is like the main one.
The baking too then. Yeah, because I know I liked how you have like recipes at the end of the book, but yeah, I just remember kind of like, you know, going through the events, and then you know, Lila, she was just like, so she was obsessed with it, like with like you, I thought it was so cool how like, you know, or she's going around all these restaurants trying to narrow down like what's going on and trying to investigate and everything. And, you know, even when she's having meals at these other restaurants, she's breaking down the food as she's eating it and like slowly like savoring it and describing it. It was just like, it was so cool to get a character that was just like so appreciative of food, like mm-hmm. savored it. Like you get like so much of who she is like while she's off doing these other things. It's like, yeah, she's trying to solve a murder because she's like the top suspect, and but mm-hmm. then she's also going to tell you like, you know, how surprisingly savory and flavorful this meatloaf is. Yeah. Like while she's trying to think of how to interrogate the chef who did it. And so I loved how there was like little, you know, that's why I think like, you know, when I was figuring out this book and where it was going to go or how to describe it, it was like, no, like the foodies are going to love this crime, mm-hmm. you know, crime novel. People are going to love this. And, you know, of course it's important for, you know, people of your community to have, an extended voice out there. Cause I know if I feel like if you know where to look, you'll find those voices. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, I love it. And it's, I think it's so important to have, you know, to have all the different types of, you know, ways that you can go with it. Like, you know, like you touched on earlier, it's like, you know, this was your experience. Yes, she's Filipino. Yes, like that's the heart of like, you know, her background and her family. But it's also like, yeah, like she's, you know, she went to college, she came back. Like there's so much more to mm-hmm. who she is. And, you know, that's probably, you know, her cultural background, probably like growing up with such like a food centric kind of family, like that's what mm-hmm. they did for a living, that probably had such a huge part into you know, how she grew up to like love food or love baking. And mm-hmm. it's so funny, you know, I love how you were saying you know, in that kind of family dynamic, they don't say they love you. They just show it through food. And I think that's also just something that's so universal, something that you can find in like any culture, which is, that's just, I'm going to keep repeating myself, 'cause that's why I thought like, you know, it's just so, it's so good and it's so important. It's just anybody from any background can appreciate it.
That's great. Yeah. And like another thing I wanted to do, another reason like food, that's because obviously like she grew up, you know, this is her family restaurant. She grew up around it. Like her, that's what her family cares about. But I also think like just from the outside, like food is kind of like a shortcut to culture for a lot of diaspora kids.
Oh,
like me,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like again, I said, I was born and raised in Chicago. I don't speak Tagalog, you know, I've been there like a handful of times, you know, it's really far. It's like really far away, you know? So like all I knew of it was my family and the food that my father cooked. My dad was the cook in the family. So he was the one who passed down, you know, like the love of food and like, and what food means to me. Right? Yeah. 'Cause again, he was, you know, he was a great guy, but again, stoic, older Asian man, not heavy with the I love yous, right? Not really a huggy kind of guy. But like when he cooked, you knew, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that reminds me of my dad too. 'Cause he was like I said, my mom's family is Mexican, but my mom doesn't cook. So my dad, I think for him, it's therapeutic. And he would just cook all my mother's recipes. So I still got like that authentic food. It was just the Irish guy in the house doing it instead of my Mexican mom. But you know, that like touches upon it, because it's like, I know, because yeah, it's you know, my dad, he's just Irish dude, you know, tough, smart ass, you know, he could be stubborn, but and yeah, you know, he wasn't very affectionate, but yeah, it was just like through the food, I think it was therapeutic for him, but he also, you know, it made him happy, but he was also, I saw that passion of him, you know, not only taking care of us, but also kind of like getting feedback or he just I see like him light up when he talks about food, and it's adorable and it's great. And like when, now that I'm like older in my own house and stuff, like, I think I remember I made my own, I hosted like a Friendsgiving one year, and my husband was on a work trip, and so it was me by myself. And so I think I had my dad like on, like, you know, on call, just like, wait, okay, you know, every half hour, like, so wait, I can't lift this, what should I do? Or like, how, you know, because he, like, he went ahead and got me like the whole brining kit and everything. I was like, you know, probably the easiest thing to do, but even then I was like, okay, I think I did this right, okay, I did this, okay, I did this, okay, I'm gonna call my dad, like, just a double triple check. No, so yeah, I definitely relate where, you know, and I see that in my husband too, where that's his way of, you know, he loves food. He loves to handle everything in the kitchen. And where I'm like, I like cooking too, but I, you know, sometimes it's just like, well, it's just easier for him to do it. And I let him do it because it makes him a little bit happier than it makes me. So I'm just like, no, I'll go let him do it. And that's his way of, you know, he sees it as like, oh, I want to do this for you, or I want to take care of this, and I want to make sure that it's right for you. You know, so I think that's really interesting how you touch upon that, where it's like, you know, like your dad, and then that resonant, like kind of, that definitely came across on the page when you were demonstrating that and telling the story of Lila's family and her titas and her Rose and Lola, right? That's her grandmother.
Yeah. Lola means grandmother. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. No, I want to like remember all these terms too. So how long did it take you to like, when did you start writing this book?
I started it maybe like, I want to say early 2018.
Okay.
Because at the time, I was still with my first agent. And because this is the first book that sold. This is my debut. But I had written another book before this that had gotten me an agent. But unfortunately, that one never sold. It's like, it's not dead yet. I still love it. It's a murder mystery set at a comic book convention.
Nice.
There was interest, so, but the timing wasn't right, so like, it's okay. I put it aside for now, and then while I started working on something new, which always like, don't sit and twiddle your thumbs, start the next thing.
that's what I started doing
while that was on while the first book was on submission. I started Arsenic and Adobo, and then luckily, like, that's what went somewhere.
Yeah, no, because that mystery at a murder mystery at a comic book convention. Yeah, I want that too. So that sounds really interesting. I'm like, oh yeah, get that out there. No, that's cool. And so, and this is going to start. So you kind of, did you start writing it or did you finish it in 20, like how long did it take you to write? The only reason I ask is because, like, mm-hmm. you know, 2020 was special. You know, just like talking, I interviewed a lot of authors last year too. And one thing I talked about a lot was asking them how they were holding up in general. And a couple of authors released their debut novel. And unfortunately it was when, everything was kind of flipped on its head. And so, mm-hmm. you know, how did last year's, like, you know, total reshifting of the industry, you know, challenge you, or how did you work with that? How did it affect, like, your idea of how this process was going to go?
Well, so I finished the version that went on sub, at the end of 20, like very near the end of 2019. And I sent it to my then agent. She didn't like it. Mm-hmm. And, we decided to amicably split.
Okay.
And then, so like literally January, 2020, I queried it. And like within 2 weeks, I got, like, you know, multiple offers. I signed with my new agent. The end of 2018 and all of 2019 were really rough for me personally. There were a few deaths in the family that really, were rough. So like January 2020, I was like, oh wow, new agent. February, I sold the manuscript. I was like, ooh, things are going so great. Like, and then, you know, a month after I sell it, like, hey, this big global pandemic.
Cool. Yeah.
And, like, you know, it messed me up in so many ways. Like, literally the day I received my contract, I got news that we were getting, like, everyone in my company was getting laid off because they were closing the branch that I worked. You know, it's so, like, 2020 was like the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, you know?
Right.
And it was one of those things where, like, I was so happy, but it felt weird to celebrate during a time like that, you know?
Yeah.
It was hard to really fully, you know, embrace that.
Yeah. I can see how maybe you felt a little guilty for, like, feeling like you were on top of the world. So then you did get laid off then?
Yeah.
At the same time.
I was like, well, at least I have this contract. So, like, some guaranteed, you know what I mean?
But, right.
You know, I'll be the first to tell you, you're not going to make a living, especially off your first book, you know? So, like, and, you know, like, I was like, well, maybe the universe is trying to tell me that you can become a full-time writer now. And, like, it was just, it was too much pressure. It was too hard to produce. And, like, having to be productive during such a, like, exhausting, draining time. Like, everyone talks about, like all writers talk about, like, we call it, like, second book syndrome, where the second book is always harder to write. Because, like, with the first book, you have all the time in the world, right? Like, you can, you know. I know people who spent 10 years on their first book. I spent, you know, about two. And then, or you're like about a year and a half, I should say. And then with this next book, it's like, oh, great. Your next book is due in 9 months, you know? And then, like, it's not only is your next book due in 9 months, you have to write that book while you revise book one and also start promote, you know? So, like, everything. Yeah. And so, yeah, you know, let's just say the mental health was not great.
I think that's like a running theme of not only last year, but of a lot of people, no matter what industry. Because I don't know, I got laid off too, and I was like 9 weeks pregnant at the time.
Oh,
and
no,
so I was
so
like
sorry, freaking
out, and I couldn't even like get drunk to cope. And, like, you know, or like I could eat, I couldn't even, like, you know, I had very, like, I think I ate, like, you know, I had like a ice cream and some cake and some pizza that day. Like, I didn't even care about my diet. I was just like, oh my God, you know, I didn't know what to do. So that definitely, the pandemic definitely, like, challenged or forced everybody to, you know, confront their mental health. And, you know, even if they had, cause I felt like I had a pretty good handle on it. But then it was like, yeah, no, it was like the universe was like, no surprise. Like, everybody's going to deal with it. We're going to, it's like time to play. So that's a good to know. I appreciate, you touching on that and being honest about it. That's one thing that the one common thing that I find when I'm asking other authors how they were coping with it. Cause like there's other people who straight up said like, oh, well, I battled depression and anxiety and this book helped me, writing this book helped me through it, or it became harder, more difficult. But I, everybody approaches it differently. And the kind of thing I kind of go for it is, whatever, mental health is so important, but whatever you got to do, whether I think any form of art, whether you're producing it or consuming it, is important for that as well.
And I recognize, despite all the hardships, I'm very privileged, I have a house, I have space in a yard, during the worst of it, I could at least do, deal with it that way. I have a partner with a stable job, which provides an income and health insurance. And not everybody has that kind of safety net, I fully acknowledge the privilege that, despite what felt like my world falling apart, I still had safety nets that a lot of people didn't have. Which again, kind of also goes in the guilt and the anxiety. Cause you're just like, oh, why do I feel like this when so many, but there's no comparison,
You're
living what you're living.
Exactly.
It definitely affected book two. It came out a little bit darker than I had meant it. Yeah. So, but I told my age, they're reading it now. I haven't gotten my edits yet. In the email to them, I was like, hey, I know tonally this is off. I know it's too heavy and I'm going to have to fix it. So don't freak out. I'm aware. And then I hit send.
Disclaimer. Little disclaimer. Okay. Before. Yes, I know.
Yeah. Exactly.
You kind of just had to get it out. And so that.
Yeah.
You can come back to it. Yeah.
Exactly. No, I totally get that. You can fix everything in revision, people. Don't worry about it. But I was just this is darker than it needs to be, but it needs to be done by a certain date and it can be fixed later on. So we're doing for now.
Yeah, for the sake of meeting deadlines, for sure. So what made you decide to go the crime route? Because you said, the book before was also that you had that had to be put aside was also murder mystery. Were you kind of just drawn to that genre, or maybe felt like you could, give it a little twist, and that's how you incorporated the food and everything?
It's funny. When I was I've always wanted to be a writer since I was younger, but I just didn't take it seriously until somewhat recently. But I always thought I would write kid lit and or fantasy. Okay. Cause that's what I was drawn to when I was younger. But I also, oh man, I'm gonna show off my old lady tendencies. I'm not that old. Growing up, I lived in a multi-generational house because we lived with my parents and my mom's parents. So that's why hence the really close multi-generational home, because that's what I grew up with. And so with my grandparents, I would watch things like Matlock and Perry Mason and Murder, She Wrote, And then my mom also really liked mysteries. She, Nancy Drew's when we were younger, Mary Higgins Clark, Encyclopedia. So I grew up around mystery a lot, but I never thought about writing one because it seemed hard. It's weird that I know the exact dates. Summer 2015, I had just gotten back. So I'd spent almost 4 years abroad teaching English in South Korea.
Okay.
And then I came back home and I was just like, okay, you're in the same place with the same people. You're almost 30. What are you doing? And then, I remembered that I had always wanted to write, but I'd never taken a class before because those are expensive.
Yeah.
But I Googled Chicago, creative writing. And then I found a workshop at this place called Story Studio. And it was one day, which I could afford. And it was a mystery writing one. And I was literally just like, well, I like mysteries. I can afford this. Let me see what it's about. And then while I was there, the idea I came up with was that murder mystery at a comic book convention. And the teacher, Lori Rader Day, she read it and she was like, hey, have you ever written before? And I was like, no, this is my first real thing. She's like, I think you're a mystery writer. she's like, this is a really good, I want to see, where this goes. And she, at the time, she was the president of the Mystery Writers of America Midwest.
Okay.
It was like, hey, our meetings are free if you want to like kind of check this out. And like the meetings happen to literally be 1 mile from my house, like walking distance. And I was just like, well, it's free. The nice lady said she liked my writing, and, you know, and then like, that's kind of like how it was really just kind of like happenstance. And like, and so I just kept on going with it.
It was almost like it couldn't be any easier for you.
Yeah, it was literally like, just like, here you go. This is what you should be doing. And I was like,
it's like you have like almost no excuse. It's like you can walk there. Like,
yeah, right. Because like right now, like I'm in the burbs. Like I'm just outside the city, and I don't drive. Because back when I did work, like at my previous day job, it was like downtown. I'm like, who drives downtown? So like, I never bothered.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, if it was in the city, I'd probably be too lazy. But like, walking distance, like I could not.
Right. It's like you'd be sitting at home like, why? I have no excuse. No, I get it. That's really cool though, that you know, you kind of, so then when did you get into like coaching writing? Did that kind of line up, or like did you, you know, because you spent like 4 years teaching English and then you came back and was kind of figuring out what to do. Is that like along the same time that you started getting into like the coaching part of it?
No, the coaching was only recently. So
okay.
So with my first book, it won a grant, like the early before it was finished, like the early pages won a grant, and it was at this mystery convention called like Malice Domestic. So I accepted it. I made a big speech, and while I was there, I met this other writer, Kelly Garrett, who we didn't talk much at the convention, but she was like, oh, you know, we should keep in touch. We exchanged like social media, like handles and whatnot.
Yeah.
And we started talking on Facebook, and she's like, hey, I'm part of this. She's like, I'm a mentor with this organization called Pitch Wars. And, you know, your story idea sounded great. I really liked what you had to say. Cause she's like, we're really big on like diversifying mystery, because she's one of the co-founders of Crime Writers of Color. So she's okay. Like, you know, she's really big on taking people under her wing.
Yeah.
And you know, she was like, hey, you know, there's this contest, you know, if you finish it in time, you should really submit. I would love to see your work, you know? And it's like Pitch Wars, it's like it's a mentoring program, but it's also a contest in some ways. And so like I applied, I was chosen. She became my mentor during these like really, really intense, like 2.5-3 months. And then I loved the community so much that I really wanted to give back. Mm-hmm. So like the year after, she asked me like, hey, do you want to mentor together? Do you want to like, co-mentor? I was like, oh yeah, that would be great. And then, you know, like, cause my previous day job, I was an English instructor. So I was a teacher. So like I always knew like I really liked teaching and helping other people. I like paying it forward and helping others along.
Yeah.
So I really loved working with her and like these other up and coming writers and helping them develop their stories. And I didn't think about coaching honestly until last year, where a writer who we didn't choose her as our mentee, but she was like a runner up. Like we sent her some feedback, like, oh, you know, we liked it. So we went with someone else, but here's some feedback. She messaged us and she was like, hey, have you ever thought about book coaching? And I had never heard of it before. And then I did some research and I was like, oh, hey, I ain't got a job right now. Why don't I? Then there was a certification course to kind of like I already had been doing it unofficially, like as a mentor with Pitch Wars and helping other writers. But this gave me like tools and procedures and like all these other ways to like really make it official. So I went through this certification program in maybe like 6 months.
Okay.
So like the actual certified book coaching is fairly recent, but I have been like helping writers since like maybe like 2018.
Oh, okay. That's really cool. No, it just goes to show like there's like all these different types of like communities out there, you know, that a lot of people don't know about. And like, if, you know, it's good to know that if, you know, anybody's struggling with getting words on paper, or, you know, they want to step into it, even if there are, maybe they like writing a certain genre, they want to step into a different genre, there's tools and resources available. And that's really cool. That's it's comforting in a sense, you know, because there's you think about like all the levels of like professional writing, and there's so many ways you can go with that, I think. So like I'm a writer in the sense, but like I do it professionally, like I guess, you know, for like marketing and stuff. But like I, you know, deep down, I've always been a bookworm. And so that's why I think it's so interesting how, you know, I creative writing was always just so intimidating. And I'm like, no, I'm going to stay in my lane. And I'm going to like appreciate the people who do it very well and how they do it. So it's interesting to learn like not only how you came up with that, but how you kind of just stepped into to that and how the universe kind of guided you to like into that path. I think that's so awesome. And then you also just you immerse yourself in the community, and then you also like wanted to be a part of it and give back too. That's very, very cool. So I love the cover, by the way, and it's like very appealing, but it's also like, oh, hey, what's going on? So like, how did you have a lot of input into like, how did you have like a vision? Did you have, you know, any kind of say as to like how the, your cover was going to come out?
Yes. So the first thing I explained, like, I am not a visual person. Like the like I hate writing descriptions. Like any like whenever I'm drafting, it's always the last thing that I layer in because like you know I draft in layers. So like if you were to see like my first drafts, nobody sees my first drafts. But like if you were to see them, it's just like bracket insert description bracket insert the you know like or, insert describe this. That's because awesome. Like it's so hard for me. To do like if I like tried to do it in the moment, I would be stuck. So like I like get it on the page and then right. you can come back and figure that out later. So like with the cover, it's so funny because like so many people are know like I have this Pinterest board and I have this inspiration, I have this, and I'm just like I know I want the dog on the cover because I love the dog and cozy readers like dogs. I'm like one. I was like, what did I say? I was like, I said, if you want to put the main character on the cover, it's very important to me that she looks like Southeast Asian, right? I didn't want like generic Asian, you know what I mean? Which usually translates to East Asian, which is not how I look at all or most, you know? So I was like, so she's brown, right? That's something I wanted to do. And I said, you know, because the food is such a big part, you know, I would like to see like adobo, like a platter of adobo or something like that. You know, and this way, and like that was like basically it. I was like, here, like these are these three things that I want. And then, four. And then also, like, if you see in the back, there's like this like spoon and fork set hanging back there because I really wanted to incorporate some like Filipino elements, and like a lot of Filipino like households and kitchens, they have like these giant spoon and fork wooden sets hanging. So it's like, you know, like it'd be like a nice little Easter egg to kind of just put that there. So like that was basically it.
And then boom.
This is maybe like the third version. So like the first version, like it hasn't changed a lot. Like it's looked almost exactly like this. Very few things changed. So they showed me the first one. I had some like feedback for tweaks. And the second one was like almost perfect. I was like, oh, sorry, one more thing. And then this was the third version. And I was like, that's it.
right. There we go. Oh, no, that's so cool. And then, no, it's so funny how you were like, oh, I just needed these four components. But it's like, that's exactly what the cover looks like.
Yeah.
And it's, that's awesome. So what, I just got a couple more questions before we wrap up. So what kind of advice would you give to Lila? I keep pronounce her name different every time I say it. Oh well.
I mean, like, you know, it's a different name to different people. So yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. So what kind of like advice would you give? And what's her best friend's name? I keep forgetting it.
Adina.
Adina, yes, I knew it was like an Ina. Couldn't remember. It had that syllable, that sound. But yeah, so like kind of like what would you like advice would you give to her maybe in terms of, cause there's some like little bit of conflict that she comes with her best friend and, not just with her relationship with her, but also like, you know, tidbits kind of sprinkle into her love life a little bit. Also like kind of like what dealing with her relationships and maybe her professional endeavors, like any of those aspects, like maybe like what kind of, you know, like advice would you give to your main character?
I mean, at the end of this book, definitely get therapy. There's a reason book two is a little bit darker.
Yeah, right.
Because like she even says this, like she, her way to handle conflict is to not, which I'm like, oh, I wonder where she gets that from. But you know, like, you know, so like she, a lot of the issues, you know, are because she wants to avoid them as much as possible. She doesn't like to deal with it. You know, which I'm sure is frustrating for the reader, but it's like, look, it's also very real. I'm just going to put that out there, you know?
Yeah, it is.
And she's also 25. So like, you know, a decade later, I still struggle with that, but you know.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
I guess, you know, just like learn to appreciate the people who have always been there for you, I guess, is like the big thing. Cause like, she's got this like big fish in a small pond mentality. And while she is, while she does love the people in her life and while she is loyal to them, I don't think she, at least in the beginning of this book, she doesn't truly grasp how much love they have for her and how necessary they are for her to like be happy and whole and complete, because they have so much to give, you know, and her perspective is like, she's always looking back. Like she, in her head, the town hasn't changed and can never change. And because of that, it colors the way she feels there. And like she then, and like so much of her, like her, Adina's just like, hey, if you would like get over yourself, like look at the situation as it is, maybe you would realize that it's not the way you think it is anymore. You know, like that's a big part of it.
Yeah, for sure. I got a lot of that, because where she's kind of like, like she, you know, she did the whole, you know, she ventured out. She left her small town to go pursue bigger things. And then, you know, she comes back and it's almost like a, you know, like she's, like kind of how you said, like she's too big for this, or she's, you know, I don't want to say like it's like her town and like her people, how she's seen them as just kind of stagnant. And maybe she sees herself as like above it, because she's like, oh, there's a whole world out there. Like, don't you guys know? Why are you still here? But then she slowly learns like there's some bit of stuff that she's got to catch up on since she's been gone. And I think I liked that, how it's, you know, I think a lot of people our age or people who go through that experience of going away to college and coming back, you know, to people, to the, this, your family is going to be there. You know, the restaurants are still going to be there. Your favorite hotspots are going to be there. You know, it's obviously the dynamic is different, and your, you know, who you are as a person. That's like, you know, now that, you know, how you said she's 25, but even now you still struggle with some of those things. It's like, oh yeah. Like I like myself more now. I'm more content with myself now than I was 10 years ago, but still it's like, I will, you know, I also want to be like humble and be like, you know, I still have plenty to learn. And I love that you could kind of see that for her, where I definitely see that Leela has like potential. She's slowly starting to like see that, where she, you know, aside from the fact where she had no choice, she didn't come off as like non-confrontational though. That's like what's interesting, how you, you know, how you kind of describe her as, because she had a goal, but it was probably, you know, to clear her name was her motivation to like investigate and to like try to find out what's been going on, so that she can be cleared for this, you know, somebody who was not, like, she could be cleared as a suspect, you know, but I guess you could see that in her internal monologue, where she's like, oh, I wish Adina was here. Like, I wish, you know, I'm not used to doing this on my own, and like, or she's better at this part of it. And so I think it was like, there's definitely room for her to grow, but I loved how you kind of saw it coming. You kind of saw her slowly, like start to notice her, her family. Like, I think it was like her, either her grandmother or her aunt who was, she kind of like took a moment to look at her, and she saw that she was getting older, and she was like, when did that happen? And it's, you know, which is another thing that any family, any person from any culture or background can resonate, like to relate to, is just seeing, you know, a family member or what have you, just being like, when did that happen? You know, since when? Like, yeah. And I, you know, going off of that, I'm all over the place, because I thought I liked everything you had going on in here. But yeah, with her. Oh, and then also, what would you give? What kind of advice would you give yourself? Maybe at the beginning of your writing journey. Like now that you've kind of been through a chunk of it.
Your writing process doesn't have to look like anybody else's, right? Just because there are people out there who are like banging out like thousands of words a day doesn't mean you have to do that. Like going through periods where you can't produce is like fine and natural, but also make sure not to wallow too long, because once you have to pick up again, it does get harder. Right. Like there's a weird line between I'm taking time for myself, for my mental health, and then like, oh no, I'm wallowing and I don't know how to get out. And trying to find that last year was kind of rough. So just like being kind to yourself, you know, and like acknowledging that like, this is what's happening and it's happening for a reason. And you can get through it because you've done it before.
Exactly.
But it's going to suck while you're in the middle.
Yeah, no, that's perfect advice for anybody. It's kind of like, I know this seems like it sucks. Like, yes, it sucks. Like, just respect it. Like, acknowledge mm-hmm. this feeling, acknowledge this emotion so that you can learn how to just like, you know, get back up. However they say, put some lipstick on and handle your shit. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, just pick it up and go like, that's perfect. Where you're just like, yeah, it's going to suck. Like, you know, mm-hmm. just be honest with yourself, but like, you could do it because either you have no choice or, you know, this is what happens if you don't push through kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But no, that's great. And, let me say, there's one last question I have here. Oh yeah. So what, and we've been doing a good job being spoiler free. So let's keep that going with what can we expect from, is this going to be like a trilogy, or you're not sure how many installments you're going to add?
So it's a 3-book deal for now. And we're going to hope that it does well enough that my publisher decides to acquire more. Okay. Like the good thing, so because like one of the good things, and also one of the annoying things, you know, it depends on what mood I'm in about like mysteries, particularly cozy mysteries, like it's a series, but they're technically standalones. Right. So like if you read them in order, you'll see a character's growth. But I mean, sure. You could literally pick up, you know, a cozy mystery like number 25, and like you should still be able to understand it because like that's how they're written,
right?
So like, fingers crossed, people love Lila, and like I can keep on writing because, you know, this is my dream. Yeah. But right now, you know, I just today turned in my book 3 proposal to my editors, so like I'd be really sad too. If that's like the last one, because I'm really enjoying this world. But book 2, I'm allowed to say the title now. It's called Homicide in Halo-Halo. It takes place in summertime. It revolves around a small town beauty pageant. Filipinos really love beauty pageants for some reason. And Lila has some very mixed feelings about it, because it's a part of her past that she doesn't want to deal with, surprise.
Okay.
Because it has ties to how her relationship with like her deceased beauty queen mother. And so there's like a lot of things that get dredged up.
Okay.
And there's murder, of course. So
sure. Right. No, no good murder mysteries without that. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's so cool. Oh no, I can't wait. I very much enjoyed this story. Like I said, you got, the pace was good. It was easy to, you know, put down and pick back up again. Relatable characters, no matter where your family comes from, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And at, you know, at the end of the day, even if, you know, you're not into murder mysteries, you'll find a lot of fun recipes and, you know, might make your mouth water too. So I think I was just a little frustrated. I was like, you know, I recognized maybe like some of these ingredients, but like some of them, the dishes sounded so good. I was like, man, I want to try like whatever pie she's making. Like she's talking about like making this crust. I'm like, what? I want to check it out. So, if anything, at the very minimum, you know, that's what it's good for, foodies too, or for people who enjoy reading up on, you know, having, I don't want to say the food is sprinkled in there, because it's very much a large part of who this family is. And but I thought it was so cool and unique for that you added like the whole element of food and cooking and baking into like solving a murder. And then, you know, it's like it's not the only body that comes up in the story. So yeah. it's great, and I loved it. So thanks. Thank you again, Mia, so much. Mia P. Manansala. Arsenic and Adobo comes out May 4th on Star Wars Day. We'll go ahead with that again. I'm very excited, and I you know, I'm crossing my fingers that, you know, you can still keep going with this with her Leela and her family and the story with Shady Palms and whatever. So I really enjoy the story, and I can't wait to see where you go with it.
Right. Thanks. Yeah. And for those of you who are not into mysteries, my writing very much looks at like food and family and how they're interwoven in complicated ways. If you do like mystery, it very much follows the route of traditional mystery. So there is something for everyone.
Yeah, no, there is. And that's what, one thing I loved about it. It was just a little bit, you know, you kind of danced away, like, the murder mystery was like kind of like how you said the cozy murder mystery was kind of like the overarching storyline, like the plot, but you know, how she got there and who she talks to and what she has to do to kind of solve everything and the things that she learns and the kind of relationships that, you know, that she has to resolve and all that. It's all a part of it. And it, you touch on it almost equally. It's almost all equally balanced. And it's, yeah, exactly. There's enough for everybody. So
I'm so glad that it really came through, that you recognize that. Thank you.
Oh, no, of course. I'm a bookworm. I'm a big dork. And so I noticed things like that. And it's, yeah, it was very fun. And I think the only thing I was like frustrated was like, I thought the jig was up, but I was wrong. So, but it was really good.
Yes, so that means I did my job then.
Yes, you all did. Right. So thank you so much, Mia. Looking forward, you know, to everything that you've got going on, and, you know, congrats and good luck.
Right. Thank you. And for those of you out there, please follow me on social media, yes, Facebook, yes, Instagram, and Twitter. I'm at MPM, the writer. Right, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye.
And thanks again for listening to the Nerd Cantina and another Cantina conversation. Hopefully you enjoyed the discussion here, and come back for more discussions as well as the weekly news. And in the meantime, go ahead and join us over at thenerdcantina.com/community. Join us over there, have some conversations, share what other books, what other nerd topics interest you, and let's build out that group there. Until next week, talk to you later, nerds.